Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive with us.
It's good to be back.
Today, we're going to be looking at the prophet Isaiah.
Yeah.
Now, I know what you might be thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Isaiah. Oh, great. Another prophet. More doom and gloom.
Yeah, fire and brimstone.
Right. But trust me, this one is different.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be very different.
We're going to be going deep.
Really deep.
Really deep, unearthing hidden meanings.
Like a treasure hunt.
Yeah, political intrigue.
Yeah.
Almost like we're reading a thriller novel.
It's kind of like a Dan Brown novel.
Totally. Totally.
But it's the Bible.
But it's the Bible, right?
Yeah.
So what makes this deep dive so unique is we're working from a lecture by the biblical scholar Robert Van Noy.
He's a leading scholar in the field.
Okay, so we're not just getting like the surface level
stuff. No. This is the good stuff.
We're getting the why behind the what, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself, Isaiah.
Okay.
Such a powerful name.
Yeah.
I mean, the name itself means salvation is of YHWH. It's not just a label. It's like a mission statement.
I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah. It really encapsulates everything.
And here's something that I thought was interesting.
Okay.
Isaiah wasn't a unique name. Mm-hmm. Like, there were other Isaiahs.
Other figures in the Bible.
Other figures in the Bible, yeah.
Running around.
So that adds, like, another layer to his identity. I thought that was really interesting.
It does make you wonder, like, was there a connection there?
Yeah. Were they all related somehow?
Yeah. Or is it just a common name?
And then on top of that, we don't really know much about his father, Amos.
Right.
Except for this really intriguing rabbinical tradition.
Okay.
That connects him to royalty.
What? So Isaiah's father might have been royalty.
Or like related to royalty.
Ooh, related to royalty.
Yeah, like some scholars suggest that Isaiah could have even been a king's nephew.
Wow, that puts a whole new spin on things, doesn't it?
Right, because then you think about like his social standing.
Right, his influence. Right,
his influence, the kind of access that he would have had.
To the king, to the court.
To the court, to everything.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about all the conversations he might have been privy to.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
Right. It paints a much more vivid picture of his world.
Definitely.
And speaking of vivid pictures,
Okay. There's
this one scene in Isaiah 7.3.
Okay.
Where Isaiah is walking with his son.
Okay.
To meet King Ahaz by the water system in Jerusalem.
So this is like the water supply for Jerusalem.
Like, imagine the tension of that moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with everything going on politically.
The weight of the situation.
The weight of the world is like on their shoulders as they're walking to this meeting.
And that detail about the water system, I think, is really important.
Okay.
Because it just shows you how connected Isaiah was to the city.
Okay.
To Jerusalem, its people, its infrastructure.
He wasn't just some abstract voice out there.
No.
He was a real person in a real place.
Yeah. Dealing with real issues.
Right. And I think that makes his message all the more real and relatable to us.
Jeff, it brings it to life.
Yeah. And speaking of connection.
Okay.
Isaiah's family played a really interesting role in his ministry.
How so?
His sons, in particular, carry these messages encoded in their names.
What?
Yeah, so, like, his son, Shir Jashub.
Shir Jashub.
Yeah.
What a name.
I know, right?
It sounds like a superhero or something.
I know, it does.
But what does it mean?
Okay, so it means a remnant will return.
A remnant will return.
And what's so fascinating about this name and the idea of a remnant is that it points to this duality of judgment and hope.
Okay, I like the duality.
Yeah.
So it's not all doom and gloom.
No, it's not all doom and gloom.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right, yeah. Like even though there's judgment coming, there's always this promise of restoration.
For the faithful,
right.
Those who remain faithful to God.
Yes, and that message, I think, resonates with us even today.
Totally.
Because it reminds us that even when things seem bleakest.
Yeah, when you feel like giving up.
There's always hope for a future grounded in faith.
Right, you got to hold on to that hope.
Okay, and then there's his other son, Mahershalal Hashbaz.
Mahershalal Hashbaz, try saying that 3 times fast.
I know, right?
It's a mouthful.
And his name literally means hasten the booty, speed the spoil.
Okay, that sounds more like a battle cry than a name.
Or like a tagline from an action movie.
Exactly.
But what's remarkable is that this name actually foreshadows a real event, the Assyrian invasion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it points to this idea that God often works through unexpected means to achieve his purposes.
So it's not always going to be straightforward.
No.
God's going to keep you on your toes.
Right. And it's almost like real life foreshadowing.
Yeah, like a movie trailer for what's to come.
Totally. And if you look at Isaiah 10.56, it uses really similar language.
Okay.
To describe the Assyrians seizing loot and plunder.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's like a puzzle.
And so to really understand all of this, We need to understand Isaiah's timeline.
Yeah, when did all of this happen?
Right, so his ministry took place during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah.
Okay, that's quite a span of time.
It is, and it was a period of immense change and upheaval.
So like a roller coaster ride.
It really was, with both prosperity and political turmoil.
And always that threat.
And that's the thing, the shadow of the Assyrian Empire.
Looming over everything.
Right, it was always there.
Like a dark cloud.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
Right, and there's this chilling rabbinical tradition that suggests that Isaiah was actually martyred under the wicked king Manasseh.
Oh, wow. So he didn't have a happy ending.
No.
That's intense.
Yeah, and it makes you think, like, could his ministry have continued in some way even under Manasseh's reign?
Yeah. Were there secret disciples?
Right. Or could those prophecies of hope and deliverance in chapters 40, 66 have come from that period of darkness?
Like a hidden message.
Yeah.
It's really thought-provoking.
It really is.
Yeah.
So we've got this fascinating picture of Isaiah, his name, his family, his connection to Jerusalem.
He's coming to life.
Yeah.
He's not just a name on a page anymore.
Right.
He's a real person.
But to really understand his message,
okay,
we have to understand the world that he lived in.
Yeah, what was going on around him.
And things took a dramatic turn after the death of King Uzziah in 739 BC.
Okay, so this is a major turning point.
Yeah, it really was, like, it marked the end of an era for Judah.
An era of what?
Of relative stability and strength.
Okay, so things were pretty good before that.
Yeah, relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking.
And that's when the Neo-Assyrian Empire really started to flex its muscles.
Under who?
So this was under the leadership of Tiglath-Pileser III.
Tiglath-Pileser III.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this was a major turning point in the political landscape.
So the balance of power is shifting.
It is.
Yeah.
And we have actual Assyrian records.
Oh, wow.
From this time period.
So they wrote things down.
Yeah. And Tiglath-Pileser, he boasted.
Boasted about what?
About forcing kings.
Oh.
Possibly, including Uzziah, to pay tribute to him.
So he's like the top dog.
He's making it very clear.
Sending a message.
He's in charge.
Yeah, don't mess with me.
Right. And so it's a clear sign that things are changing.
Yeah, the power dynamics are shifting.
Yeah, the pressure on Israel just keeps building with events like the Syro-Ephraimite War in 734 BC.
Okay.
And then the capture of Damascus in 732 BC.
So it's like a domino effect.
It is. One event leads to another.
Yeah, and it's all building up to something.
It's all building up to something.
You can feel the tension. Yeah. I'm on the edge of my seat here.
Yeah.
What happens next?
We'll have to wait and see. And that brings us to, I think, one of the most significant events in this whole saga, the fall of Samaria.
Oh, yeah.
In 722 BC.
Right.
This marked the end of the Northern Kingdom.
A tragic end.
Yeah. A devastating blow to the Israelite people.
It really was. And it all comes down to this guy, Hoshea.
Okay.
He was a puppet king
installed
by the Assyrians. But he tried to revolt against them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that sealed Samaria's fate.
Oh, so he underestimated the power of the Assyrians.
Big time.
Yeah.
You don't mess with this Assyrian Empire.
Right. But this wasn't the end of the story.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, yeah. Just a few years later, in 701 BC, we see Sennacherib, the Assyrian king, laying siege to Jerusalem.
This is a big deal. Like, this is the heart of Judah.
Right. And all those processes of judgment and deliverance that we've been talking about.
Right.
They're all coming to a head.
Like, it's all leading up to this moment.
Yeah. And guess what?
Yeah.
God intervenes.
He does.
In a spectacular fashion.
Like a Hollywood ending.
Almost.
With a header.
But better. Right. Because it's real.
It's real.
And just as Isaiah had foretold.
Right. So the prophet was right.
He was right. Jerusalem is saved.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's incredible.
It's a testament to God's faithfulness.
Yeah, even when all hope seemed lost.
Right, even when it looks like it's over.
God's still working behind the scenes.
He's always got a plan.
Orchestrating events according to his plan.
So we can trust in that.
We can trust in that.
Even when we don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
God's got it.
But let's shift gears a little bit.
Okay, where are we going now?
And talk about the structure of the book of Isaiah itself.
Okay.
Because it's not exactly a linear narrative.
No, it's more like a tapestry.
A tapestry.
With all these different threads and colors.
Right. And luckily for us, Robert Van Ooy,
our guide.
Yes, he gives us this roadmap to help us navigate this complex text.
Like a map through a jungle.
Totally.
Okay, I like that.
And so chapters 36, 39... they stand out because they're historical narratives.
Not prophecies.
Right.
So it's like a history book.
Yeah. And they illustrate how those prophecies we've been talking about were actually fulfilled.
In real life events, like yeah. we're seeing it all come together.
Exactly.
It's like a behind the scenes look.
And then we have those larger sections, like the prophecies against foreign nations.
Okay.
In chapters 13-23.
Yeah.
What some scholars call Isaiah's little apocalypse.
Oh, wow. That sounds intense.
In chapters 24-27.
Okay.
And then the Book of Emmanuel.
The Book of Emmanuel.
Yeah. In chapters 7-12, which is all about the Syro-Ephraimite War.
Okay. So each section has its own theme.
Yes. And purpose.
Yeah. But they all fit together.
They all fit together like a puzzle.
To create this bigger picture.
Exactly. And for example, those prophecies of judgment in the earlier chapters.
Right.
They're always intertwined with a message of hope.
So it's not just doom and gloom.
No, it's not just doom and gloom.
There's always that glimmer of hope.
Yeah, and this recurring pattern in chapters 1-6.
Right.
It's like a constant reminder of God's justice.
And mercy.
And mercy.
They go hand in hand.
Yes, they're working together.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is, and I found it really intriguing.
What's that?
How Van Ooy highlights these subtle differences between chapters 7-12,
okay.
which are addressed to King Ahaz.
Okay.
And then chapters 28-35.
Right.
Which are addressed to the nobles.
Okay, so different audiences.
Different audiences.
But the same basic message.
Right, they're both dealing with the aftermath of that Syro-Ephraimite war.
So he's tailoring his message
yeah.
to each group.
But the core message is the same.
But the core message is the same.
Judgment, repentance, and hope.
Yeah, and then we transition to chapters 40-66.
Okay.
Where the tone shifts dramatically.
How so?
It becomes much more focused on comfort and restoration.
Like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And these messages are delivered in anticipation of the Babylonian exile.
Oh, wow. So they're going through a lot.
They are.
But there's still hope.
There's still hope.
Even in exile.
Yes. And at the heart of this section lies Isaiah 53.
Isaiah 53.
A chapter that has intrigued and challenged readers for centuries.
Why is that?
Because it's a powerful portrayal of a suffering servant.
A suffering servant.
Who bears the sins of his people.
Wow.
And this figure is often interpreted as a foreshadowing of Jesus Christ.
Oh, so it's a messianic prophecy. Yeah. And it's an incredible example of how Isaiah's message transcends his own time.
It speaks to something bigger.
Right. And it raises a really profound question.
What's that?
How does this messianic prophecy,
right.
with its themes of suffering and redemption,
okay.
connect the theme of deliverance from exile?
That's a good question.
That permeates this whole section of Isaiah.
Yeah, it makes you think about the deeper meaning of exile.
Right.
What does it mean to be truly exiled?
Not just physically, but spiritually.
Yeah, and how does the suffering servant
offer a way back?
A path back to wholeness.
Yes, and restoration.
That's a beautiful image.
It is, and it makes you realize that Isaiah's message isn't just ancient history.
Right.
It's a living word.
That speaks to us today.
That speaks to our deepest human longings.
For connection.
For purpose.
And for redemption.
Yes. We've been talking about that powerful image of the suffering servant in Isaiah 53.
Right in the middle of all this talk about deliverance from exile.
Yeah, it really makes you think, how are those two ideas connected?
Like, what's the deeper message here?
Exactly.
Well, one way to look at it is that the exile isn't just a physical event.
Okay.
It represents something much bigger.
Like what?
Our separation from God.
So spiritual exile.
Yeah, like a state of being lost or disconnected.
And the suffering servant.
Who we often see as a foreshadowing of Christ.
Right.
Offers redemption, not just from physical captivity, but from that spiritual exile.
Wow. So he's bridging that gap between humanity and the divine.
Exactly. And that redemption comes at a cost.
A sacrifice.
Yeah. And Isaiah captures that with so much raw emotion.
Yeah, it really draws you in.
And it makes you feel the weight of it.
It does. It really does.
So it makes you wonder, are we living in a form of exile today?
In what way?
Maybe not physically, but are there ways we're separated from God?
Or even from our truest selves?
Right. Are we searching for fulfillment in things that ultimately leave us empty?
Clinging to our own self-sufficiency.
Yeah, forgetting our need for something greater.
So Isaiah is challenging us to take a hard look at our lives.
To identify those areas where we might be living in that self-imposed exile.
And to seek that path back to wholeness.
Yeah, to find our way back to God.
This deep dive has been incredible.
It really has.
We've gone from deciphering ancient names to unraveling political intrigue to contemplating the very nature of exile and redemption.
It's amazing how Isaiah's words can still speak to us today.
They really do. It's like they transcend time and culture.
Because they address those core human longings.
Yeah, for connection, meaning, purpose.
Those things are always relevant.
So as we wrap up this journey through Isaiah's world,
yeah,
let's remember those key takeaways.
What are they?
It all starts with Isaiah's name itself.
Salvation is of YHWH.
Right. And that sets the stage for his entire ministry.
A ministry filled with prophecies and symbolic actions.
And those incredible names of his sons.
Foreshadowing events to come.
Exactly. And we can't forget the historical context.
Right. Isaiah lived through such a tumultuous time.
With the Assyrian Empire looming over everything.
Threatening to destroy everything they knew.
Yeah. And his prophecies were so intertwined with those historical events.
Offering warnings, comfort, and hope.
And then there's the structure of the book itself.
Right, like a tapestry.
With all those different threads woven together.
To reveal God's plan for his people.
A plan that includes judgment, redemption, and ultimately restoration.
It's a powerful message.
And Robert Van Noy's insights have been so helpful in unpacking all of this.
They really have. He's given us a roadmap.
Yeah, to help us navigate this complex text.
And discover those hidden treasures.
It's been a privilege to explore these ideas with you.
Likewise.
But this is just the beginning.
Right.
I encourage you to continue this deep dive on your own.
Read Isaiah for yourself.
Wrestle with those tough questions.
And see what new insights you uncover.
And as you do ponder this.
Okay.
If we view that suffering servant as a representation of Christ.
Okay.
And the exile as a symbol of our separation from God. What does that tell us about our own need for redemption?
And how does Christ's sacrifice bridge that gap?
Bringing us back into relationship with God.
It's a question worth pondering.
It is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Isaiah.
It's been a pleasure.
Keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.
Until next time.
Until next time.